Hi, everyone, and welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. As you might guess, I'm Josh Nason. I'm a writer, editor, podcaster for this here website, and in the past, I've been doing that for other websites as well. Welcome back. If it's your first time here, welcome for the first time, or something like that. Anyway, we're here continuing my look back at the year that was 2021, and this episode specifically is about mixed martial arts, part two of my four-part series, looking back at the year that was in MMA. We do 3 months at a time, and this time around, it is April, May, and June. Helped me do that, as always, and as he has for the past few years, Paul Fontaine of this website, as well as Fight Game Media. So yeah, April, May, and June. A lot of interesting things happen, as always, when we look back at this series. We had a return to normalcy, in a sense, as UFC returned to full houses for their pay-per-views, despite Dana White saying that the media was COVID crazy. We had Kamaru Usman continuing his march to welterweight goatness, so to speak. We had a really fun show with UFC 261 in general. Rose Namajunas, a great moment there. Chris Weidman, Anderson Silva-ing his own leg. We talk about that. Talk about the woes of PFL, Bellator making their way through, a new UFC lightweight champion crown, Tito Ortiz drama, all kinds of other stuff and more. This 1 hour look back at April, May, and June in 2021 in mixed martial arts. Let's get to it right now. Myself, Paul Fontaine, you now. Well, this great look back at 2021 continues. This time we go to the true sport of kings, mixed martial arts, for a look at April, May, and June. Helping me do that, as always, the great Paul Fontaine of WrestlingObserver.com and Fight Game Media and the Clinch podcast. You can hear every single week for free. And Paul, even though we just talked a minute ago, for the sake of the listeners, how are you doing? Let them know.
I'm doing good. Wow, being referred to as the great Paul Fontaine. I got to add that to my resume.
Yes.
I've only up to this point, you know, I sometimes hit very good, usually average, occasionally good, but great is rarefied air. So I appreciate that designation.
Well, a good way to throw off people that ask, you know, or just random, yeah, you know, people that say, you know, how you doing?
If you I'll give any answer. I'll be like, yeah, not so good.
Yes, average, probably average at best. And they get a look because it's a throwaway line. But use that one if you ever want to like just throw someone off just for a minute. Yeah.
No, but today I'm doing real good. It's a good day.
Good to hear. We came off a fun weekend of fights, which we'll talk about in our year-end episode. We look back the final 3 months of the year. But, Paul, we have a lot of other great fights to talk about as we look to April, May, and June. And, again, if for some reason someone's joined this for the first time, we do for the MMA series year in review, we do 3 months at a time. We did January, February, March. You can find that back in the archives very easily, or on my Twitter or Paul's Twitter because he retweeted it, but it's very easy to find, free as always. And yeah, so we'll go through April, May, and June. In April, we'll lead off with, you know, what I think was probably the biggest, you know, obviously the biggest event of the month, biggest kind of doings. We had UFC 261 Jacksonville, Florida. A return to normalcy, I put here, because this was a full house. This was UFC's first return to running a full house since prior to the pandemic started, and drew really well on pay-per-view. They loaded up this card for both the at-home audience and obviously the in-home audience, so to speak, as well. This thing sold out really quickly, as all these pay-per-views have really done, and 700,000 approximate purchases on pay-per-view. And this was headlined by a rematch, Kamaru Usman knocking out Jorge Masvidal in that rematch to retain the welterweight title. And again, we talked about him last episode, kind of the this is a really quick turnaround champions-wise, but obviously the talk about him being the GOAT continued his march towards cementing that status, or at least trying to convince more people of that status in the main event, but knocking out Jorge Masvidal, which we really hadn't seen, I believe, in a UFC in the octagon, or at least in quite some time, but definitely not since his rise to fame after that big Askren knockout. Rose Namajunas winning, regaining the strawweight title with a big head kick knockout of Bailey Zhang. This was a big moment as well on the card. People love Rose Namajunas, and this was a really kind of feel good moment in this one. There's a lot of talk going into this. There was a Namajunas comment about Weili Zhang about, you know, better dead than red, because Weili Zhang obviously from China. There was talk about this whole anti-communism thing. What was it directed at? And there was a lot of that going on in the lead up to this fight. This is a triple main event when it came to titled matches. Valentina Shevchenko defending her flyweight title once again, running through Jessica Andrade and looking great in doing so, with the most arguably the most dominant champion in the sport right now, if not
right now,
yeah, without a doubt. No real challengers on the horizon. I think a potential challenger, a potential big fight coming up for her, may got squashed up for the time being. We'll talk about that later. Chris Weidman, he Anderson Silva'd his own leg against Uriah Hall. I forgot this happened on the show. I mean, this was such a newsworthy show for a lot of reasons, but this was, you know, if anyone obviously remembers the Anderson Silva Chris Weidman fight, the rematch when Anderson Silva snapped his leg. And it's insane. Chris Weidman did the same exact thing in this fight against Uriah Hall. That was a crazy moment. And then Daniel Cormier had this confrontation with Jake Paul. We'll get to a little bit of the reason why later, because Jake Paul was all over the combat sports world in headlines when it came to this segment of months. But he essentially had called out Cormier after his win over Ben Askren. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But Cormier was not having it, knew that Jake Paul was in the arena, walked right over, threatened to slap him, and he was not playing with Jake Paul. But this whole show, this was a lot of fun because the newsworthiness, the results were interesting, and it felt like normal again having fans in the stands.
Yeah, I recently had, you know, it's year end and we've had conversations about, you know, like stuff like fight of the year, show of the year, you know, knockout of the year, stuff like that. And, you know, and this last show that we just had as we're recording this was a phenomenal show and really, like, you know, almost in some ways an all time great show. But this particular card in April, for me, like, it may not have been the best card. It may have been the best card, but for me, like, I can't remember ever enjoying a card as much as I enjoyed this card. Just because of the fact that we got fans back. I mean, that was a huge part of it. And just the things that happened on the show, you know, and we normally don't talk about, you know, when we're going through like these big picture items, unless there was something like super notable that happened. But I think back to the first three fights on this card where, you know, like it was all people that nobody's ever heard of, including me who watches every show. Like I didn't know who any of these people were, but just watching the fights and listening to the crowd reactions to them, they felt like, you know, all time epic, great fights, you know, just because like these fighters were feeding off the fans and it reflected in the performances. And we just got these great, great fights like in the prelims. And then, you know, and it just kept going through the card. And it really, like, as much as we all enjoyed, you know, the shows in the Apex where, you know, you could hear the blows and, you know, it was a completely different viewing experience and it was a good, and I think this UFC lends itself more to an empty arena experience than just about any other sport. But having it back in front of fans, I mean, it just reminded us, you know, how much we love it and how much the fans add to the product, you know, and pro wrestling, which you're also covering, obviously was a big part of that too. And then, you know, like, and it was packed and UFC, you know, to this day now, and this feels like you talk about in the wrestling recaps that I've been listening to and how everything you couldn't believe it was this year. And for most of the stuff we've covered so far, like, yeah, you know, it feels like it was this year. This particular show feels like it was like 2 years ago, like, because it feels like we've been back with fans for a long time now. It's just, you know, and so much has happened in the last, you know, 8 months that, you know, I forget. And you know, and the Chris Weidman thing and Rose, you know, regaining the title and, you know, she's already defended it, right? So against the same opponent. So, I mean, it's hard to imagine that these two fights both happened in the same year, especially how that fight ended. You know, and Usman, you know, destroying Masvidal, which I think most people favored him to win, but I don't think most people saw it being as quick and as brutal as it was. And so that was crazy. You know, Valentina obviously, you know, retaining, and then the Uriah Hall, Chris Weidman, like, wow. You know, and you know, you come out of that wondering if Weidman's ever going to fight again. And like, I think it was like 6 weeks later and he was already posting videos of training and stuff. And the guy's just a different kind of beast. And Uriah Hall, wow, his reaction after it happened, he was just stoic and not like in a, like a silent assassin kind of way. It was more like, I did my job and I don't like it. I don't like that this happened to him, but I got to move on. And I just thought that was class, but it was also, you know, just, he's had his own issues in his career and, you know, and this was a big win for him, but he didn't really feel like celebrating because he felt bad for Chris Weidman. So yeah, just a great fight. And then we had a, you didn't even mention it, but another kind of weird, kind of almost horrific injury with Jimmy Crute, with his foot, you know, with the drop foot kind of thing that happened in the fight with Anthony Smith, where it got stopped at the end of the first round. So it was just a crazy, crazy, you know, all the way from the prelims right through the main event, just a great, great card. And fans just eating this up, you know, and it's the hottest ticket in town. Like, I don't think they've had an unsold ticket all year.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, they're so hot right now.
Yeah.
Even though it doesn't feel like it, they are.
Yeah. When it comes to the pay-per-views and we've talked about the, you know, kind of their plan to run the Vegas fight nights in, or the fight nights rather, in Las Vegas, which, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum before. But the pay-per-views, you know, to me, it's smart. If you're going to go out on the road, go out with something that's a sure thing, something you can load up the card as best as possible and go to markets that you know are hot for it, and you're not going to have much in the way of restrictions in terms of being inside and things like that. We'll talk more about kind of some other headlines as relates to that. But yeah, they're, when it comes to certain perceptions, they are certainly hot. I think I was actually just thinking about this day, cause I was listening to another show and, you know, talking about it, say, this is a really great era, a golden era. It was referred to.
Yeah.
I think, in some ways, yes, I was thinking like when it comes to in-ring competition, I think it's hard to dispute that claim that if you were to compare this to say 5 years ago, I think the level of competition from top to bottom is higher in all the divisions. Star power wise, and when it comes to like recognizability outside our bubble, I don't know if that's the case. I think the sport is missing another McGregor type, another Lesnar type, a Rousey type that really crosses over. I think if somebody can emerge, and it's easier said than done, because you know better than anyone, it takes something to really drive the outside. You know, there's the brand element of it, but there's also the star that really just stands out. And I think in some ways, as sad as to say, Jake Paul for some reason seems to be that in combat sports, which is just horrendous to say, right? But I think UFC is missing that. MMA is missing that. But in terms of, I think the recipe, if you think about it, it's like a cake, right? I think the recipe, the ingredients are coming together. Everything's really like cooking well, nicely. And I think everything's pretty much for the most part, like done, but it's like, it needs like that extra something to really put it over the top. So when it gets to that point, it's going to be like, I mean, it's already a nice boom period, and now financially they're well set. But I think it's like it's missing one or two breakout stars. Who knows if McGregor can come back with a win and what have you? I'm not banking on that because I don't know what we have with him anymore, and we're gonna talk about that in a second. We're missing one or two breakouts for it to really, you know, come full circle for me.
Well, I think that, you know, they have, like you said, they have the ingredients there because they've got this awesome platform on ESPN. And so what they need is they need the fighter with the right kind of personality. And we see a few of these people kind of emerging, like a Sean O'Malley, like a Khamzat Chimaev, like a Tai Tuivasa this past weekend. So they need to have that, but then they also need to be winning. And so that is the combination that, you know, doesn't always happen together. You know, we had Sage Northcutt in the past, Paige VanZant, you know, that had the one part, but they didn't have the other part. And plus, they maybe didn't even have the platform because they were on FS1 at the time. And ESPN's a way bigger platform. And one thing you got to realize, like some people look at these TV numbers and they think, oh my God, like the prelims only did 560,000. Or I think the old Jose Aldo fight on last weekend did 570,000 viewers on ESPN. But these are also being simulcast on ESPN Plus now. And we have no idea what those viewership numbers are. What we do know is that ESPN is very happy with them. And what we also know is that UFC Fight Pass has 750,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And like there's no live shows on the, on that platform. So these are people that are UFC fans that are paying $10 a month to have archived footage and regional shows. You got to think a very high percentage of those people are watching these shows on ESPN Plus. Because, you know, and so in addition to that 570,000 that watched Jose Aldo, was there another 300,000-400,000 people watching on ESPN Plus? Probably are, because, you know, they can, you tune that in and you watch the whole card from beginning to end. Whereas with the, if you're watching on TV, you get the prelims here, you get the main card here. Sometimes it goes to ESPN News, you know, but you turn on ESPN Plus, start to finish, the whole card's there. So I think more and more people are just watching the shows on ESPN Plus. So only they know how many fans they are. But you look at these pay-per-view buy numbers that are coming out. This show we're talking about did 700,000 buys. You know, a couple of years ago, nobody was doing that except for Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey. And now, you know, like, you know, we got Kamaru Usman, we got Israel Adesanya pulling numbers like that. So I think these people are bigger stars than we realize. It's just we don't have access to that data that we used to have.
Let's go to this first chunk of a very interesting April. Chris Weidman mentioned before him, before this fight, he said that he was a bad matchup for Israel Adesanya, which in retrospect, I think at the time people were kind of like, huh? But even afterward, I don't really think anyone want to see that matchup anytime soon. Diego Sanchez was pulled out of his Donald Cerrone fight due to there was an injury there. And then I think it might have been to Cerrone. No, actually, it was a Diego Sanchez injury. He was later released. There was this big controversy with Josh Fabia. This was this thing got really ugly. And it's crazy because the video was released from the fighter beings with John Anik and Paul Felder and kind of the announce team, kind of similar to, you know, NFL or anything like that. When coaches meet with the broadcasters a couple days before, they do, the fighters do the same with the broadcast team. And this footage was something else. More footage came out. Sanchez and Fabio, basically, you know, Fabio had some weird mind control over Sanchez. This was a bizarre situation, and we'll get more into the next month, kind of how things ended up. But yeah, he was first he was injured, now the Cerrone fight, then was cut, and then things just went absolutely haywire. This was a bizarre story. Even talking about it now, I can't believe how strange it got. Israel Adesanya and Marvin Vettori, a title fight rematch, or a rematch for the title, a rematch between them, the first for the title, was announced as we planned for June. Ben Askren knocked the F out by Jake Paul in less than a minute, I believe. This was a huge combat sports story for a lot of reasons, a lot of interest in this fight. It was a thriller event. This was a carnival circus, everything in between. And in the end, Ben Askren take home a nice payday, but knocked out in less than a round. Frank Mir was on the show, losing to injury replacement Steve Cunningham in a boxing fight that no one really remembers anything about. Of course, after the fight, every washed past MMA fighter wanted Jake Paul. This is Jake Paul talking about, you know, wanting to fight Daniel Cormier. Tyron Woodley happened to be backstage because obviously he is a teammate of Ben Askren, and that ended up leading some things we'll talk about in a minute. And then Oscar De La Hoya was drunk on the broadcast as well. So this was a very memorable night in all the wrong ways for Triller and all this. The Venom era began in UFC when it came to fighter outfitting, shorts and gear and all that. Marvin Vettori versus Kevin Holland was first announced. Of course, some of these are out of order. It was announced they were going to be headlining a show in April. Ciryl Gane and Alexander Volkov was headlining a show in June. Korean Zombie versus Dan Ige headlining another show in June. September's UFC 266 was announced it was going to get the Jan Blachowicz Glover Teixeira light heavyweight title fight. In August, 265 was getting the irony of this. Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena. An MMA fighter's finger, quote unquote, disappeared. Wow. This is on the MMA indies, so to speak, when the guy was fighting and all of a sudden the fighter looked in his glove and this pink finger was nowhere to be found. Well, it was found because it freakishly got kicked back and broken and tucked in the glove, like backward. It was just this weird visual. Like, it's almost like he had to suspend belief that it perhaps could have disappeared. Like completely, like they were actually looking all over the cage for it, and ended up being severed, and they were reattached, and he ended up being okay. But boy, what a strange situation there. Dana White and John Jones trolled fans with a Francis Ngannou fight announcement on April Fool's Day. Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor 3 was announced for July. Poirier claimed that McGregor never made the donation to the charity he was going to. is a Good Fight charity. After the second fight, and of course, McGregor flipped out, threatened to pull out of the third fight after it was announced, and in the end, made a $500,000 donation to Poirier's hometown. Mike Goldberg was done with Bellator, what was called a production decision, and they decided to go with Mauro Ranallo instead, which made sense because the Showtime tie-in and everything there. Bellator 255, Patricky Pitbull defended the featherweight title over Emmanuel Sanchez in their Grand Prix tournament, setting up the fight everyone wanted to see, which is AJ McKee. Talk about more about that in a second. Bellator 256, Ryan Bader dominating Lyoto Machida in the opening fight of the light heavyweight Grand Prix. Bellator 257, the Grand Prix rolls on. Vladimir Nemkov and then Corey Anderson advancing in the Grand Prix there. Cyborg returning against Leslie Smith to defend her featherweight title. Paul, we'll stop there. And thoughts on any of that chunk?
Yeah, a lot there. The Triller nonsense, I've somehow managed to keep off of my radar. You know, I kind of follow it to, in a tertiary way, but I've not spent any money on it, and I never will. Josh Fabian, Diego Sanchez thing. Like, I had never heard the name Josh Fabian before all this happened, and I wish I hadn't. All that stuff. Ryan schooled me on it on our podcast, and my God, like, I felt so bad for Diego because he's clearly just, you know, getting really, really bad advice. And, you know, and then, you know, that combined with all the years of damage that he's taken and probably things that he was taking, and, you know, and I hope it works out for him. He had a really, really bad year, as I'm sure we'll get into later. The stuff with Poirier and McGregor was really interesting. You know, it was almost like Poirier was kind of talking trash and then took it a little far and then had to step back because as much as they're having fun, you know, trying to build up this fight, he did not want to lose the fight over, you know, whether or not McGregor made the donation. Clearly he intended to. And he ended up doing it, and you know, they kind of worked that out, and I think we saw after the fact that the heat between the two of them wasn't nearly as much as they were letting on that it was. And Mike Goldberg, you know, going out with a whimper, not a bang, because yeah, I you know, it was weird because I don't watch all the Bellator shows, but you know, I watch them when I remember that they're on. And I was wondering where Mauro was for the longest time because it always seemed to be Goldberg. And then all of a sudden this announcement comes. And then all we've had since then is it. And the weird thing is we get Mauro for the oftentimes we get him for the main cards, but they have a different announcer on the prelims. So it's clearly a Showtime thing because they want him on their broadcast. And, you know, good for him. I mean, he's one of my favorites. I know not everybody likes him, but I like him in boxing. I like him in pro wrestling, and I like him in MMA. He's a little over the top, but I like that. And these cards you mentioned for Bellator, I mean, it's like they happened, but nobody watched them. And I have no idea how that company continues to operate.
Yeah.
But they do.
Way too many shows and not enough talent there. Yeah. Not enough talent for the amount of shows that they do. We talk about that every single year.
They have talent under contract, but it's like they never use them. Like, I mean, we see these 15, 16 fight cards and half the fights are, you know, like prelims with guys with 2-1 records and stuff. And the main cards, it's like everybody seems to fight like once or twice a year. Like, I just don't know what's going on there, but yeah, whatever. They're still going.
Let's go to this second chunk here. Tough coaches were officially announced. Alexander Volkanovsky, men's featherweight champion, and then Brian Ortega. We're going to be coaches for Tough. They're returning on ESPN Plus. UFC 262 sold out in minutes. Dana 5000, remember him? He's back to bare knuckle boxing. Bare knuckle boxing would come up a lot during this 3-month stretch. Stefan Bonner, remember him? Kicked out of a gym for not wearing a mask. And I include this in here because I saw all types of headlines of him throughout the year, like just a really weird and sad decline. You know, he does some pro wrestling, some fighting still. Just, yeah, not a good look for the former UFC star, Stefan Bonner. One on TNT. We mentioned this last month because the card was announced for TNT. This was very strange. So, Demetri, this is not the way that one wanted to return because they had two of their, you know, supposedly kind of bigger stars, and Demetrius Johnson, obviously former UFC flyweight king, and then Eddie Alvarez, really popular fighter, former UFC lightweight champion. But Adriana Moraes knocking out Demetrius Johnson with a really vicious knee, while he was grounded, but obviously that's a rule set in one. So that was, it was a no doubt knockout. And then Eddie Alvarez, this actually opened up the show. I remember this because I happened to watch this because the fight started like almost right when Dynamite ended. So Eddie Alvarez lost by a very strange disqualification. There was he hit his opponent in the back of the head, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't look like intentional. It was kind of like an almost accidental, something that we see like all the time. But for whatever reason, his opponent just couldn't fight. And so they disqualified Alvarez. And it was this really bizarre situation. They must have talked about this on the broadcast for a good, like, it felt like 15 minutes. It was Michael Civello, I believe that's his name, right? The announcer, the longtime MMA announcer. Rich Franklin was also on the call as well because he's a VP of one. And they were all confused about the rule set. And it was like, it was the weirdest thing, like how they were just talking about this stuff for like, it had to be probably like 10 minutes. It felt like a lot longer. It was, I just remember just being almost like they were like evaluating like on the news site, a new scene of like a murder or something. They were just getting so in depth this thing. Like, why are we still talking about it? It was the strangest 15-minute open to a MMA show I can remember in quite some time. I remember this specifically sticking out. It was just strange. UFC on Vegas 23 results. Marvin Vettori, we just mentioned him. This is what has set up the Adesanya fight we mentioned earlier, dominating Kevin Holland, a unanimous decision win. Mackenzie Dern returning to armbar Nina Nunez in the first round, and Mike Perry lost yet again. UFC in Vegas 24 results. Robert Whittaker decision Kelvin Gastelum. I don't remember much about this fight, but I do remember watching it. Nothing really to write home about, but him putting himself in an interesting position to challenge Adesanya as well. Jeremy Stephens injured Jakar Close in a weigh-in shove that gave Close a concussion and a neck sprain. And it's just like, he didn't knock him down or anything. He just really shoved him hard, and the fight was off. And Dana White later blamed Sean Shelby. It was just kind of a very weird, like, MMA thing. Sage Northcutt had to be pulled out of his fight with Shinya Aoki for one due to lingering COVID symptoms. Anthem acquired your favorite promotion, Invicta Fighting Championships. It was learned, no big surprise, that Khamzat Chimaev was not retiring after all. Clarissa Shields, a famous female boxer, dominant female boxer, Olympian, I believe, announced she was going to be making her MMA debut for PFL in June. Some Dana White quotes from press conferences. The media was, quote unquote, COVID crazy about UFC 261 and asking about masks and all this stuff. No mask mandate. However, UFC was going to provide free masks for anyone that wanted to for both 261 and 262. Colby Covington was declared to be fighting the winner of the Usman Masvidal title fight. Dana White says, I have never made an illegal bet. He denied making a $2 million bet with Snoop Dogg on the Jake Paul Ben Askren winner. Said that John Jones wanted to make $30 million to fight Francis Ngannou. And he was talking about a Nick Diaz return, and then saying it would be possible for Chimaev to fight Diaz when Diaz returned and if he returned. McGregor bought the pub where he punched the old man, if you remember that story for a couple of years ago. Speaking of John Jones, he was done with his management team, Malki Kawa, after being with them more than 10 years and signed with a former head of Golden Boy Promotions that said, I think with Richard Schaefer, that is said to be a deal maker. Nothing's happened as of yet. UFC public pay was, quote unquote, made a trade secret in Florida, so no fighter pay was going to be announced there. We'd hear more about that with Nevada later on in the series. George Masvidal announced that he was going to be starting his own bare knuckle promotion, of course, Game Bread Promotions. TJ Dillashaw was hurt and out of his main event upcoming with Corey Sandhagen. Ray Stolosevich signed with Bare Knuckle Boxing, whatever it is, BKB FC or whatever the hell it is. And a fight with Paige VanZant was going to be announced for May. The fight was made in May, but there was some speculation those two were going to go at it once again. Yoel Romero had to be pulled out of his Bellator fight with Rumble Johnson due to a failed medical. And then Anthony Pettis lost in his PFL debut and what would be a continuing string of failed signings for PFL when it came to name value actually making waves. Thoughts on any of that?
A lot there. I remember Dota 5000. I just DM'd you an article of my coverage of the fight with Kimbo. You may put it in the show notes or something. It was pretty good work. You know, we don't get the one shows up here in Canada, so I missed all that crazy talk, but I read about it. One of the guys that writes for F4W, I think he still does, Jeremy Peebles, he was covering it for Fight Game. And so, yeah, he had some crazy stuff about that, and it sounded like I missed chaos, but I also didn't miss much in terms of relevance, because like nobody watched those shows, as we talked about on the last show. Colby Northcutt, Sage Northcutt, I think he still hasn't fought, and it's crazy how far his star power has fallen. The Anthem acquiring Invicta, I don't know if I've made this joke on this show, but I've said it on past. Len Asper, who's the guy who runs Anthem, he's from Winnipeg, and he's got a well-known reputation, for being a self-made millionaire. The problem is he was born a billionaire. So him acquiring Invicta, and then, seeing how far that promotion has fallen off the landscape, has just been crazy. I mean, they made the questionable decision later in the year, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, of running a pay-per-view when they were getting less than 10,000 viewers for the free shows on Access, was interesting, to say the least. Clarissa Shields, like you talked about, Anthony Pettis losing his PFL debut, and Clarissa Shields barely won, and then, went on to lose in her second fight, and that was much ado about nothing. And the only other thing I want to talk about is Dana White and his, all the stuff around COVID with the UFCs. And Ryan Frederick I think he went to two UFC events this year. And the first one, which was the show we'll talk about in a minute, UFC 262 in Houston, he said the COVID protocols there were like super strict, and they had to sign a pledge and weren't going to leave, and they weren't going to do this and weren't going to do that, had to wear a mask everywhere, had to prove that you were, COVID negative tests, if you were vaccinated, all that stuff. And by the second show, it was business as usual. It's like COVID didn't exist. And it's like, and those shows, I think, were like 4 months apart. So that's how much things have changed since, since May. But to be fair, we haven't really heard of any like super outbreaks or anything at these events. So I guess whatever they're doing is working.
Very true.
Yeah.
Let's flip to May. And more success for the UFC 262. We'll start with that. Charles Oliveira winning the vacant lightweight title with a knockout of all things, really showing his rounded game. Of course, again, the coincidence, because he just picked up the victory this past weekend over Dustin Poirier, but really setting up a nice year for him, knocking out Michael Chandler, former Bellator lightweight champion, to win the vacant lightweight title and essentially end the Khabib era. This was a really entertaining show. Box office wise, obviously it sold out, and I believe this one was in Houston, if I'm remembering right. Did 300,000 on pay per view, so not too bad for an Oliveira Chandler fight. The rest of the show had some not a lot of star power, because the Nick Diaz fight, I believe, was initially scheduled for this, got moved. But this was had some other good fights on the show. Beneil Dariush dominating Tony Ferguson to up his stock in the lightweight division. Andre Munoz submitting Jacare Souza and broke Souza's arm. And this would be Souza's last fight in the UFC. And Edson Barboza knocking out Shane Burgos in a fight of the year candidate. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, newsworthy wise, it's kind of just a changing of the guard. And obviously we have a long ways to go before we see if Oliveira has a lot of staying power. Obviously, the win over Dustin Poirier this past weekend was huge. But, back at this point, we really didn't know. Oliveira's on a really nice run, and I think kind of an unheralded run, because he's not really brash or outspoken or anything like that. But this was the beginning of a really nice year for Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, obviously, he just, cemented his position as the lightweight champion, because this was, was for a vacant title, essentially. And it was a vacant title because Khabib had vacated it. So a lot of questions about whether or not he was a deserving champion and he beat Michael Chandler, who was coming off that big win over Dan Hooker. And he'd beaten Tony Ferguson leading up to this. And now, he's beaten Dustin Poirier. It's just, the crazy run he's been on since losing to Paul Felder and, just over 4 years ago. He's won, ten fights in a row. All but one of them have been by finish. Like, that's just insane with the quality of opposition that he had. And the one fight that he didn't finish was Tony Ferguson, where, I mean, any normal person would have been stopped in that fight. Like, Tony Ferguson took so much punishment there that could have easily been stopped. dropped, you know, probably five times. So, yeah, great performance for him. Like you said, I mean, you know, the fact that this show did 300,000 buys and it was very much a one fight show because you had that main event. And then, you know, the co-main was Tony Ferguson, you know, who's, you know, not been doing well in recent years against Beneil Dariush, who is anything but a, you know, a name fighter, and then nothing else on the rest of this card. Like, you know, all the way through the prelims, like this was an ESPN Plus fight night card with a lightweight title match on the top. Obviously, you know, the tickets were sold with Nick Diaz on the card, and he had the rare distinction of basically selling out two shows in a row because they sold the tickets for this. The tickets, you know, instant sellout. And then a week after, they announced that he was injured and was going to not be able to fight till May. So then they sold tickets for Phoenix, and he sold that in June, and he sold that show out as well. So, you know, good for UFC, good for Nick Diaz. And, or is it? Yeah, it was Nick, right? I always get those two mixed up.
No, it was Nate.
It was Nate. Yeah, yeah. Nick fought later. So, yeah, it was Nate. Nate fought, you know, sold out two shows in a row. So, yeah, but I mean, 300,000 buys is, you know, that's, you know, other than if you're going to headline with like a women's title fight or a flyweight fight, like, you know, that might do like 100,000 like right now, because they're just, people are just are not buying those shows, and that's why they're never main eventing anymore. This is almost like the baseline for UFC, you know, now 300,000, which is, you know, that's what they were at in, you know, the 2010s, you know, like in the early 2010s when they were like super hot, like the run of the mill shows, you know, that were headlined by like Rich Franklin or, you know, like that level fighter, were doing, you know, 250, 300. And this is what we got for this fight. So, yeah, but you know, it was a fun show. You know, sometimes that's what happens with these shows. They, you know, you get a lot of finishes. And again, you know, like with the fans being back, I think a lot of these fights, the fighters were feeding off the fans. And this is when you started getting like fighters starting to request, they wanted to be on these shows with fans, you know, like, you know, they weren't calling for fights at the Apex. They wanted to be, okay, we're in Phoenix next month. I wanted to be there. I want to be in Las Vegas and in July. I want to be in Abu Dhabi in August, you know, like they want to be on these shows with fighters or with fans. So, good second show with fans for UFC, and nice big win for Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, the rest of this whole month, there was nothing really like that big that stood out. It was kind of an even flow month when it came to headlines. So we'll go through some of these other results and happenings and get your thoughts. UFC Vegas 25 results there. Yuri Prochazka, I swear I know how to pronounce that, Prochazka, looking pretty good. The light heavyweight division, knocking out former title challenger Dominic Reyes with a nasty spinning elbow knockout. This was an awesome knockout. And Dominic Reyes just, you know, definitely on the decline after that Jones loss. And really, I thought he was going to be a staying force at light heavyweight, and he could be at some point, but not looking good here, losing versus via spinning elbow knockout. And then Jiga Chikadze, a rising star at featherweight, knocking out Cub Swanson in under a minute. And, you know, maybe not exactly mainstream by any means, but a name I think is, you're going to be hearing a lot about, you know, this year, next year, and hopefully in the future. There was more fallout from the Diego Sanchez, Joshua Fabia UFC drama. Sanchez, there was what did he release? There was stuff on Instagram released, the videos I talked about before, and eventually Sanchez terminated his relationship with Joshua Fabia. There's all types of fighters coming out against Fabia. And basically, there was just a claim he had just like mind control over Sanchez. And there, then Fabio later would talk shit about Sanchez. It was just a real big mess, and quite an end for the for a future Hall of Famer, I would assume, in Diego Sanchez. More Tito Ortiz drama. He was filed for unemployment despite being employed by the city of Huntington Beach. More about him in a minute. UFC 263, we just announced this, mentioned this a minute ago, was officially announced to be heading to Phoenix, Arizona with a full house. Mentioned this, Nate Diaz was hurt, and the Leon Edwards fight was moved to 263, a bit of a shell game there. Florida dropped marijuana for its prohibited list of substances prior to UFC 261. That would be a bigger story with other states as the year went on. Michelle Waterson versus Marina Rodriguez was set for the new Vegas 26 headliner. Rodriguez won that fight, and then Alex Morono defeating Donald Cerrone by first round TKO. Cerrone's sixth straight defeat, but he said he still wouldn't retire, wanted to go out on his own terms, and Dana White later agreed to that. But yeah, definitely kind of a really slow and sad decline for the Cowboy. Michael Bisping said he was offered a Jake Paul fight. I believe it was around $500,000 he said he was offered. The one problem with that is Bisping is missing an eye. Bellator 258, Sergio Pettis won the bantamweight title. And then Anthony Johnson picking up a nice knockout win in his light heavyweight Grand Prix debut. Again, this is supposed to be against Yoel Romero, but that had to be scrapped. MVP broke Derek Anderson's nose on his way to another somewhat meaningless victory. And the day after Anthony Johnson won, he was arrested for identity theft. So, yeah, there's that. PFL 3, another one. The GOAT, the heavyweight GOAT, as they called him, Fabricio Werdum, was knocked out in his PFL debut. However, was later overturned to a no contest. Dan Hardy asked for his release from his 8-year UFC deal. That's what he's claimed it was. He still was under a UFC fight contract, believe that. And later he was granted that release. Again, remember, he was fired by UFC and also BT Sport after that incident, Fight Island. But yes, now he's completely free and clear to fight and do whatever he wants. UFC, it was learned, they vetoed the proposed Oscar De La Hoya GSP boxing fight for Triller. And again, I put these kind of back to back because it brings into question this idea of how long should UFC have control over someone's contract after they retire. It's pretty insane that, you know, it's years after someone calls it good, they still own the fight rights to them. It is insane to me. And then Alan Jaben, not really a star by any means, but a handsome fella and and a good fighter at times too, an entertaining fighter. He decided to retire at a young age and get out of the game. Thoughts on any of that?
Well, when I mentioned earlier in the show about potential stars, one of the guys I should have mentioned and didn't, you mentioned in this segment, that was Yuri Prochazka. And it's too bad that he didn't fight again after this, because it felt like he was on the brink of something special. When, you know, he had a lot of hype coming into UFC. He's had knockout wins in his first two UFC fights, and vicious, vicious knockout wins. And when you look at his record prior to UFC, he wasn't fighting on, you know, like small regional shows. Like he was fighting big fights in Ryzen and beating names that people know, you know, CB Dollaway, Fabio Maldonado, King Mo, Brandon Halsey. Like, you know, so that's a much higher quality of competition than most fighters coming into UFC have done. And he's won 12 in a row, 11 by knockout. So this guy, and he's got a great personality too. So it's just a matter of getting him in front of more eyeballs and getting him into big fights. And I think he is a future light heavyweight champion, probably in this coming year. So look out for him. Tito Ortiz, I mean, we have a segment on our podcast called We Have to Talk About, and more often than not, it's Tito. And we could do Tito every week if we wanted to. He's such a knucklehead. Florida dropping pot, and then that reminded me of the other state that dropped pot. And then, you know, the next day they announced Nick Diaz comeback.
Right.
And, you know, so that was not a coincidence, I don't think. PFL. Okay. So you mentioned Werdum got KO'd. That was a shit show. Werdum did not get KO'd. I mean, technically he did, but he submitted his opponent. The guy tapped, the ref missed the tap, and Werdum let him go. And then the guy knocked him out after he had already submitted. So that's why it was turned to a no contest, because it was brutal. And Werdum was done with, you know, this whole promotion after this fight. I don't think he fought again, and I don't think he will fight again. That place is just, I heard some stories from Filthy Tom, and the less said about PFL, the better.
Let's go the rest of the month. Dana White, some of his quotes. John Jones is meeting with Hunter Campbell, UFC top lawyer and one of the deal makers there, talking about some quote-unquote big fights, and mentioned that a Stipe Miocic fight was possible. Still has not happened. Unsure. This is a good one. Unsure if Kayla Harrison is ready for the UFC. And then a month later or so, said he was ready to sign her when her free agency window began. So, yeah, there's that. Dana White later announced Stipe Miocic was going to get the winner of Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis, a fight that had not officially been made yet. He questioned John Jones' desire to fight and that he has, quote-unquote, moved on from Jones fighting at heavyweight. John Jones later saying he's sitting out a year when MMA, quote-unquote, is bigger. All right. Dana White said UFC Fight Night staying in Las Vegas for the duration 2021, and that Dana White was open to a Gaethje versus Chandler fight. Imagine that. I think everyone would be open to that. Yeah. Paulo Costa announced he was going to be returning and fighting Jared Cannonier in August. Darren Till versus Derek Brunson. was set to headline an August show. TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sandhagen was rescheduled to July. Bellator announced they're going to be returning to live fans, going in the bubble at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut starting in June. Tatiana Suarez, I put her in here just because I think if she can stay healthy, she's going to be a champion, but we'll see if that happens. Fighting for the first time or clear for the return for the first time in a couple of years. We'll talk more about her in a minute. Vitor Belfort announced he was going to be going to boxing. Big surprise there. Everyone's chasing the money. Henry Cejudo not going away. Headlines of him throughout the year, just calling out people, saying he'd beat this fighter, but not committing when actually getting back into the UFC. I mentioned earlier, Jacare Souza, done with the UFC after his contract was fought out. Paul Felder, a very solid, I'd say upper tier, lightweight fighter. Not one of the best, but one of the toughest and entertaining guy. And for the most part, every time he went out there, it was an entertaining fight. He announced his retirement, staying in the broadcast booth. And I think that was a good decision for him. UFC on Vegas 27, Rob Font decisioned Cody Garbrandt. And then Carla Esparza looking for her return title fight at some point, getting a TKO win over Zhirjan, I think is how you pronounce this. Jack Hermanson submitted Edmund Shahbazyan, a once rising welterweight prospect, that or 185 prospect rather, that looked to be like destined for something. And again, he still could be at some point, but really going through a tough couple of years here. But Jack Hermanson submitting him and sending him in the loss column once again. UFC was going to start getting into crypto and NFTs. Khabib Nurmagomedov, it was confirmed he was offered $100 million to box Floyd Mayweather, and he turned it down. Thiago Santos versus Johnny Walker announced he's going to be headlining a September Fight Night show. Max Holloway versus Yair Rodriguez was set for a July headliner. Jimmy Smith, former Bellator announcer and UFC announcer, heading to WWE to announce pro wrestling. Khabib Nurmagomed Sharipov's career at this point looked to be over as he was dealing with a myriad of health issues. And then the first rumors and rumblings of Jake Paul versus Tyron Woodley began to circulate. Paul, kick it over to you.
I don't know if anybody had Jimmy Smith to WWE on their 2021 bingo card, but if you did, you won.
Good luck to you.
Kayla Harrison, there's another name, we could have mentioned as a potential star. She's got the wins, she's got the personality. What she doesn't have is the opponents, because she's too big for 135 and there's no featherweights in UFC. So even if she does get signed by UFC, I don't know who she's going to fight. I mean, obviously the fight that everybody would have wanted is Amanda Nunes, and you'd probably still make that fight, but it's a lot less appealing after the result of this past weekend show. But I mean, if you've seen her in PFL, and if you've heard her in promos, she is basically a combination of Chris Cyborg and Ronda Rousey at their peaks. Like, she's got the fighting ability of Cyborg, just destroying opponents, and Ronda Rousey with the personality and the promos and the fighting ability. Like, she's got it all. She's a little on the older side, but she also doesn't have the mileage on her. So she probably could, be a headliner for another 5 years at least. And, but the problem is you got to get people for her to fight. And that's where they're going to run into issues, because all the top featherweights are in Bellator right now. The only other thing that kind of stuck out to me from this was Bellator going with live fights. Oh, there's one other. It felt like, it's June when they did, and it felt like it had been so long, and what were they waiting for? And meanwhile, as we're going through it, it really wasn't that long after UFC did it. It's the way time moves, in this sport, that it just felt like it had been so long. But the Paul Felder retirement, the one thing that stood out for me with that was it was kind of a surprise. Like, I mean, in the sense that, we weren't surprised that he was going to retire, just because he'd already kind of retired once and then came back and they signed a new contract. And this just came, the announcement was made during a show, and there hadn't really been rumors of it ahead of time. And they did this super long video package, almost like if he was going into the Hall of Fame or something. And I just thought, for the level of fighter that Paul Felder was, they don't typically do something like this for somebody that's retiring, but it just shows you how much they like him and how much they value him, that they gave him a nice video package like that. And then they cut away to the announcers and they all put him over. And it was a really cool moment if you're watching the show live.
And we go to June. So we round out the this 3-month stretch here. Again, a lot of kind of even flow news, so to speak. UFC 263, another great pay-per-view for the UFC in arena and also the box office as well. This is, again, in Phoenix. 600,000 estimated on pay-per-view. Israel Adesanya defending the middleweight championship over Marvin Vettori in their rematch. Nate Diaz, the return, finally picked up this is a five-round co-main, third from the top, rather, which is very rare. The Diaz rule. You got it. Just like the Freebird rule, right? Losing to Leon Edwards finally getting a big name opponent after everything that he's gone through. We've documented here ad nauseum, and he almost lost in the last round. Diaz hit him, and he was on the rubber chicken legs or whatever you call it, doing the crazy dance. But Diaz still picking up the win, Edwards picking up the win rather. And yeah, I think Diaz basically probably claimed he won afterwards, as he always does. Brandon Moreno submitting Deiveson Figueiredo to win the flyweight title. This was a really fun moment. First Mexican-born champion, I should say, in UFC. Obviously, Cain was of Mexican descent, but born in the States. And this was a really a big moment, kind of an upset win considering how dominant Figueiredo had been. But Moreno was just this is a fun trilogy. I think we're going to see a third fight here coming up pretty soon. But this was a great rematch and a real feel good moment. And I mentioned here, Nate Diaz smoking at the press conference, big surprise there. So yeah, this was a fun show, and they've really kind of, you know, UFC, as we talk about how a great year they've had and pay per views and all this, they really have come into this formula of for the majority of these shows, or not majority, but kind of like the big tentpole pay per views. But they've come to this formula to get three big fights and let everything else kind of figure itself out. And when they do, they tend to do pretty well at the box office.
Yeah, like 600,000 buys for this show. I think that's the plan. You know, you book three fights and you hope that at least two of them go through. And if three of them go through, then they're going to have a really, really great night. Two of them go through, they'll do all right. And one of them goes through, hopefully it's the main event. And that's kind of where we're at. And then we had an interesting show later in the year that did no business, because of stuff falling apart, which we'll get to, I'm sure, in the next show. Moreno Figueiredo was awesome. I can't wait for things to calm down a little bit in Mexico so that they can go there and do a show with Moreno headlining. Hopefully if he retains the title against Figueiredo in next month, I think that show's in Houston, or I think they're back in Houston again, and he'll be over like stink in Houston, Moreno, because there's a lot of Latino population there. So if he can retain the title, they got to book a big show in Mexico City and have him headline, and he's going to be such a big star there. Nate Diaz, this was incredible, because for 24 minutes Leon Edwards dominated him, and it was to the point where you were wondering, should Nate Diaz even be fighting? And then he just came on in the last minute, and if that fight had gone on 30 more seconds, he was probably going to finish him. And he came out of it probably as a bigger star than he went into it as, even though he lost. And poor Leon Edwards, picks up another big win. He's got this incredible streak going on, and he just can't seem to move up the card. Just combination of bad luck and, inactivity. And, I think he's a lot better fighter than people give him credit for. But, stuff like this happens, and all people are talking about is Nate Diaz. And we're 7 months later, and we're still talking about Nate Diaz, and who cares about Leon Edwards? In the main event, we barely talked about it, but Israel Adesanya, he that first fight that he had with Vettori, it was a split decision, and Vettori was claiming he won. The split decision, I was one of the media members that, one of the few media members that actually scored it for Vettori. And when I went back and watched, it was like, I think I was a little generous. Adesanya probably clearly won that fight, but one of the judges gave it to Vettori as well. It was, another good show for them. As they kind of march towards the middle of the year in the really, really big fight that was coming with Connor. Another solid show for them.
Kayla Harrison, we'll go through the rest of these headlines. Kayla Harrison booked for the PFL finale. We talk about her a lot in this show. Tito Ortiz, finally, Paul. His long, the watch was over. If you're familiar with Game of Thrones parlance, Tito Ortiz resigning from the Huntington Beach City Council due to what he called quote unquote, character assassination. Of course, he did none of this on his own, didn't post any videos or cause issues not wearing masks or appear at rallies or things like that. So, yeah, I mean, he didn't do anything, Paul. Everyone just go heading after him. Yeah, unbelievable how that works. In a headline I never thought I would say ever, PVC was set to commentate on Jorge Masvidal's bare knuckle boxing show. Kamaru Usman versus Colby Covington was confirmed for the title later in the year. Endeavor, big surprise, and we'll talk more about this on future shows, having a great year thanks to the UFC and only thanks to the UFC. Jake Paul, this fighter pay thing became another kind of flare-up during this month, as Jake Paul is just ripping UFC contracts and people are actually listening to him. Dana White, of course, calling him an idiot, questioning everything about the Askren pay-per-view success and trying to, throw cold water at any angle he could at Jake Paul. However, he still let Jake Paul come to shows and think it was just really, really weird. But you can tell it was aggravating because Jake Paul was actually right. And these guys are making tons of money outside. And they're like, why are we not making money inside? And we'll talk to one of the fighters that affected here in just a minute. Uriah Hall versus Shane Strickland is announced he's going to be headlining a July fight night card. Paulo Costa, we just talked about him. He was pulling out of a UFC main event due to fighter pay. Calvin Gastelum slid right in there, and it was said he was going to be fighting Jared Cannonier. And Dana White, actually, in this case, rightfully said that Paulo Costa was in no position to ask for more money. Again, this guy has just had quite a decline ever since that loss or that fight with Romero. It just, or the Adesanya fight, it was, I can't remember what it was at this point, but it was, it was the Adesanya fight because it was the claim of drinking too much wine beforehand, every excuse in the books, and now he's pulling out of fights. And yeah, what a big decline for Paulo Costa. Darren Till versus Derek Brunson going to be moved again. They were talking about a show in London. I don't remember anything about this, but UFC 266, they were looking to have in London. Obviously, that didn't happen in London. UFC Vegas 28 results. Yair Rosenstrike getting another last-second TKO win, this time over Augusto Sakai. And then a fight of the year candidate, Santiago Ponzinibbio against Baez. I believe, is his name Carlos Baez, or am I completely making that up?
I think it's Miguel Baez.
Miguel Baez, a fight of the year candidate there. Dana White announced that Nick Diaz, again, would likely to be returned. He was disputing Tyron Woodley's pay, that he made more, or that he was going to make more for a Jake Paul fight than he would for a UFC fight, of course. And he said that Damian Maia was likely done in UFC after his latest defeat. We talked about Invicta a second ago. They announced they were going to be doing fan voting, Paul, to make future fights. Alistair Overeem, instead of going back in MMA, re-upped with Glory to return to kickboxing. Anthony Smith versus Ryan Spann announced he was going to be headlining a September fight night show. And Clarissa Shields rallied for a TKO win in her MMA debut for PFL, and that she was going to be returning for the promotion in August. Kick it over to you.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the pro wrestling fans listening. You said Uriah Hall and Shane Strickland. Just want to clarify, it was Sean Strickland.
I said that, I was just like, Shane, I'm just going to let it float away. Yeah,
I was wondering, maybe that's why he got cut, because he's doing UFC fights and Vince probably doesn't like that. There was a show that was earmarked for London, and I was just looking up the card, and so UFC 266 may very well have been at one point, but there was a fight night card where it was originally going to happen in London. And then if you looked at the card, like every single fighter on the card was like European. And it ended up being moved to the Apex because they just couldn't do a show in London yet. So I think that maybe that was like right around that same time. Nick Diaz, in talks to return, and, you kind of always figured that it would happen at some point, but as soon as Dana White actually starts talking about it, usually he's one saying, oh, that guy's never going to fight. He's never going to fight. And then when he says he actually is going to fight, that's a pretty good sign that he probably is. Damian Maia, he had that loss to Bilal Muhammad where it was not even really super competitive. It's too bad. His contract ran out and, just kind of went out. Probably one of the best fighters ever to not win a title. Invicta, announcing fan voting. I didn't even remember that, but sounds like something they'd do. And I'm sure it had nothing, came out of it. And Costa, Tito, goes away from the public eye and Paulo Costa is right in there to take up his knucklehead thing. He had a fight. He at one point, I might have mentioned this last week, and maybe it's coming up in the notes at some point, but he was going to take a year off to get hair plugs. And that ended up not happening. But just what an idiot.
Let's go to the rest of the month here. Patricio Pitbull and AJ McKee announced it's going to be set for Bellator in July. I don't know if they announced it for Los Angeles at this point, but obviously one of the biggest fights that they could put on. Max Holloway was injured and had to pull out of the aforementioned Yair Rodriguez fight. Oscar De La Hoya and Vitor Belfort were going to have a boxing match for Triller set for September 11th. Anderson Silva dazzled in his boxing debut against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. And yeah, people really seem to be really impressed with him. And of course, Jake Paul talking about maybe him fighting Roy Jones Jr. because that fight had been talked about forever, so it hasn't happened yet. But who knows? At any point, that one could be announced. PFL, again, they're just no luck when it comes to the names they're bringing in. Gleison Tibau. When it comes to a battle of former UFCers, Gleison Tibau defeating Roy McDonald by a decision, I think they probably wanted that to be reversed. But Roy McDonald, it's a the poor run in PFL here, not really kind of helping out that much. Anthony Pettis lost again, 0-2 in his PFL run. And then Kayla Harrison, no big surprise, picking up a big win at the season finale. I believe it's the season finale of PFL, something like that. UFC in Vegas, 29 results. Korean Zombie returning to decision. Dan Ige, and then Vega. Chito Vera edging out Davey Grant in a pretty good fight there. Not much else on that show. Rashad Evans, no big surprise, announced that he wanted to return to fight. He wanted to fight Jake Paul, get back to MMA. He's announced he's actually going to go in that direction with MMA. We'll talk about that in a later episode. Luis Pena, the violent Bob Ross, as he was coined, a kind of a fun character, not so fun after all, charged with robbery and battery related to a domestic dispute, which we later learn about, and Pena having some mental issues and really just a decline that that I didn't expect to see. And then all of a sudden it turned really, really ugly when you get to know a little bit more about him and kind of what he had gone through. And yeah, kind of a fun character, but not fun any longer. Islam Makhachev versus Thiago Moises set for the UFC Vegas 31 main event. Fedor returning for Bellator to fight in October. UFC Vegas 30 results. Cyril Gane decisioning Alexander Volkov and putting himself in we'll talk about a second, for an interesting fight next. Tanner Boser knocking out OSP in his return to heavyweight. And he was a guy that I think had been, he fought John Jones for the interim or for the light heavyweight title, rather, back in the day, and really kind of been in that light heavyweight division, kind of a good fighter for a long time, but definitely on decline now, not really having a ton of success at heavyweight. And then Cyril Gane versus Derek Lewis for the interim heavyweight title was announced as being heavily discussed. Francis Ngannou not happy about this. We'll talk about this more in the next episode because this is really kind of when we start to learn more about this, and this is just a complete mess. Again, fighter pay had come up with this and an interim title fight that no one really wanted to see, really just designed to fill a pay-per-view and kind of stick it to Francis Ngannou. Gegard Mousasi set to defend the Bellator middleweight title against John Salter in August. Joe Schilling was involved in kind of a violent bar altercation where a video was caused where he walked in and essentially knocked this guy out at the bar. It was just kind of a weird situation. But he used to fight in Bellator, obviously a kickboxer as well. And kind of an ugly situation there. Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira was delayed to October's UFC 267 due to injury. Khabib Nurmagomedov said that Dana White still bugging him to come back. Not gonna let that flame die. And then again, mentioned earlier, Tatiana Suarez has announced for her return fight finally against longtime vet Roxanne Modafferi. That was being targeted for UFC 266. Paul, finish this up.
Yeah, Khabib telling Dana, he's just not that into you. he's been trying to tell you that all year. You're not listening. That was another bad decision in that Tibau Roy Mack fight that you mentioned. Tibau, it was clear, like I think the media members were 100% for Rory McDonald. It was a brutal decision. The commentators were even railing over it. And Rory Mack, at that point, he was pretty much done. I think he ended up making the playoffs, but he had a completely uninspired performance and didn't win his first playoff round fight. The Luis Pena story was really sad, and don't really want to say too much about that. Fedor returning to fight in Bellator in October was, you know, there were all kinds of speculation going on about who the opponent was. I know, I think Filthy called for the fight. I know Jake Hager wanted to fight him. There was somebody else. Oh, Anderson Silva, I think, was asking for the fight. And all those would have been great. And they get Tim Johnson, which, I mean, it was such a dumb fight. Like, nobody could possibly want to see that. Fedor gains nothing from beating him, and they can't do anything with Tim Johnson if he beats Fedor. So it was just a stupid fight. Fedor ended up winning, which is probably the best result, but I mean, just a stupid decision. And yeah, well, I'm sure we'll get into this Gane Lewis thing later, but the key was, and this is where it became, and you talked about in the last little mini segment about fighter pay. And I mean, here is where the key was, is that they needed a title fight to sell tickets, and they needed Lewis to be in the title fight to sell tickets. So originally they were going to do Lewis and Ngannou, but Ngannou had wanted time off because he had just fought. And so he wasn't going to be ready for another month, but they have a show to book, and they needed a title fight to headline because they didn't want to headline with a Nunes fight. And as it turns out, the Nunes fight fell through anyways. So it's a good thing. But as far as like pay-per-view, nobody wanted to see this fight and nobody bought it. But UFC doesn't care because they get their money from ESPN, whether five people buy the fight or 500,000 buy the fight. So it doesn't matter to them, but they needed a title fight to sell tickets to the event. And they did. You know, they, I think it was a sellout. If it wasn't a sellout, it was real darn close because Derek Lewis is super popular in Houston. But it didn't sell anything on pay-per-view. And you know, Gane, I don't even think he considers himself a champion. He won a number one contenders fight, essentially. And it was barely even that because Lewis is not even really a number. You know, if this was one, if Gane was one, Lewis is probably like three or four. He's not number two. Mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, that's a very interesting fight coming up with Ngannou and Gane. And this gets us there. But it was not a title fight. Nobody was buying it as that. And the pay-per-view buys kind of proved that. So, and last episode, I think I mentioned Alistair Overeem getting into boxing, and it was actually Anderson Silva. So I corrected you last segment, so I should correct myself on this one. No, it was Anderson Silva, and he's got some skills, and he'll probably do pretty well in that celebrity boxing deal if he gets the right opponent. So he'd have a second career there.
Yeah, I think we'll be hearing more about that in 2022. So again, looking back at those 3 months, some title changes, some champions made. Pay-per-view, UFC is back when it comes to in-arena stuff, setting up for a very strong half of 2021, which we'll talk about next with July, August, September. We're going to talk about Conor. We're going to talk about all types of other things next month, the constant travails of John Jones and trying to get him back in the cage, and all types of interesting stuff as well. Paul, before I let you go, chance to go ahead and plug where people can read you, feel you, follow you, and just be with you, so to speak, sure. Online way.
So F4W, I've got the ratings articles that come out like just about every day, so just check out the front page around 5 p.m. Eastern. There'll probably be some sort of ratings article from me. On my audio stuff, I've got the Josh mentioned at the beginning of the show, the In the Clinch MMA podcast. It's available on the free feed of the Fight Game Media Network. That's on all major podcast platforms. Just search Fight Game Media and you'll see our show in there, along with some other pro wrestling and boxing podcasts. They all come on the same feed. So people obviously from this site are probably interested in pro wrestling as well. And there's some great pro wrestling content on that feed as well. I also have on the Fight Game Media Patreon, which is $5 a month, the Dynamite Show, which I do with Jeff Hawkins, which covers AEW Dynamite. And again, that feed has three other weekly shows, as well as every one of our Fight Game shows has a monthly podcast on the Patreon as well. So there's tons of content for your $5 a month. And then I also do some rating stuff over there at Fight Game Media in written form. So, and then the last thing is something, you know, I brought up on the last show and it's kind of taken off. It's a lot of fun, is the Cup of Joe with Grandpa Dez YouTube show. That's available free. That's just me on my own, not affiliated with anybody. Just type in Grandpa Dez into the old YouTube search engine. I've had some great guests. Brian Alvarez was on last week. I got Oliver Kopp coming up this week. You know, former guest on this show, I believe. Mm-hmm. Next week I got a big guest, Lance Storm, coming on the Christmas Eve show. So that's a lot of fun. And and just various different personalities and friends of mine and people I've met along the way, and even some people I don't know have come on the show. So it's a lot of fun, and you can check that out for free. And I'm going to be getting a podcast version of that as well, because a lot of people have asked for it. So
Good stuff. Well, Paul, we've had another great episode here, and we'll talk to you more in about a week or so to get through the rest of the summer.
Halfway through the year already. Wow.
I know. Blazing through. Paul, yeah. Paul Fontaine, thanks so much.
Thank you, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for dropping by. Thanks to all you for dropping by as well. One thing I forgot, I did not put in my notes for June, I should have mentioned it, was Ariel Helwani leaving ESPN. That's right. Early part of June, he had a long-term deal, We have several years with ESPN. It had been his dream job, talked about that a lot, and announced that he was leaving ESPN, as most people expected, for a variety of different gigs, with both returning to MMA Fighting to resume the MMA Hour there, also with BT Sport, The Ringer, and other, I think it was one other outlet as well. So yeah, doing a ton of different stuff there, both in MMA and pro wrestling. Imagine that, getting back into this this crazy game of pro wrestling and doing a lot of interviews with WWE talents, and that access helps. Did an interesting interview with Paul Heyman and several other talents as well. So yeah. So that happened the first part of June. MMA reporter and friend of the show, friend of the website, Ariel Helwani, left ESPN for a variety of other gigs. And yeah, I think that we'll call it good there. A lot of, again, interesting things that happened. And we have another 6 months coming up. Next episode will be July, August, and September. Again, we got to talk about Connor, and there'll be all types of other stuff as well. And looking forward to having you back. And again, if you're a fan of pro wrestling, you can hear my, what are we through? Five parts of the 12-part series, looking back at the year that was in pro wrestling, and getting some good feedback on that. I appreciate it. These things take a lot of research to do, obviously a lot of time to record, booking guests, all that good stuff. So if you share this episode or other ones, that helps us out a lot, helps me out a lot, and I greatly appreciate it. Again, a lot of time spent looking back at this year that was, and it's fun to do, but it's also fun to have a lot of people hear it as well. So thanks for all your sharing and goodwill. And that's it. Until next time, which will be like in a couple days, insert catchphrase here.